Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for tales and related discussions, internet style.
Spoilers.
We'll be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we warn you again. This New Year's, we're looking forward, mainly to the spring, arrival of Series 7B. We speculate, debate, and ask, what the hell is Clara anyway? But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Witten. Schemo can write pretty much anything, and we're just going to be like, oh, that's awesome. And with me are Melissa Mazza.
Perfect Whovia's name.
And Keir Hansen.
I'm holding off for a cat fight.
Hey, welcome to episode 19 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we make ridiculous assumptions so you don't have to. We're here this week talking about just speculations on the upcoming Series 7. I'm Jay, and with me tonight are Melissa and Keir. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, Jay, how are you?
Very good, sir. Very good, sir.
All right. Well, we were able to scrape a bit more news together this week. Obviously, things just kind of cooling down after the Christmas special, and so we're, you know, just trying to look forward to what we've got coming. A lot has come out in the past week. Let's see.
Well, speaking specifically about the Christmas episode, since we're on the heels of that, one big point of news was just the fact that it set considerable records here in the States for viewership. CBC America was very pleased to see the kind of numbers that put up. I think all their promotion paid off.
Yeah, it was actually, it says here, 1.434 million. This is just under Asylum of the Daleks, which was 1.555 million. So, yeah, it was definitely record-breaking. It was a rise of 54% over last year's Christmas episode. So, I mean, more than two times the number of people watched this one than they did last year. And rightly so, I'd say.
Yeah, that's a good thing, because it was actually two times better of a Christmas episode than last year's was.
Yeah, definitely so. Yeah, they're saying that, you know, it feels right to be ending the year ratings on a high with Doctor Who. You know, that's their flagship show at this point. You know, that I can't remember the exact numbers. I was reading somewhere that Doctor Who brings in, like, 2.5 times more income than any other show on the BBC. So, you know, for them to say that, you know, this is the high point of the year, yeah, that's about it. I mean, this is the show.
Yeah.
And that's got to apply to, obviously, to the extension of the franchise here in the States as well.
Mm. Well, yeah, I'm assuming so. I wish that they would just get over the whole licensing crap like that and just give us actual BBC One, or, you know, BBC, instead of, you know, this is what we think the Americans can handle. Here, let's give them this. Yeah, it's, I don't know, because most of the time...
Every once in a while, we'll give them the X-Files. But we needed to cool off a bit.
Is there a show that you want to watch that's on BBC One, or you're just saying in general?
No, just in general. It's, you know, it seems like every time I turn on BBC, it's, you know, every now and again, you can catch Doctor Who, but mostly it's just, you know, like, Top Gear, if you're lucky, or, like, Kitchen Nightmares.
Yeah, it's usually Top Gear. Personally, though, I like the BBC America, because I have been to England, and all that they have are, no offense to people in England, because they do have the best shows, like, quality-wise, but all they watch are these soap operas of, like, EastEnders and all that. Yeah. So I would rather not have the channel 100% EastEnders all the time.
Yeah, well, not necessarily that, but, you know, just give us a little bit more than, you know, just like, you know, three or four shows that they think will do okay over here. You know, let us pick. Let us prove what we like watching.
Thank God Doctor Who is one of them, though.
Yeah, absolutely. We've also got some 50th anniversary speculation stuff going on. Obviously, I mean, that's going to be prominent throughout this year. First of which is that John Barrowman has actually said that he wants to return for the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, he's been saying that.
He's phrasing it a little more carefully now. He's almost Did you get the feeling that his tone was kind of not whiny, but rather insistent? He'd be, how did he phrase it? Something along the lines of, I'm not looking at the article at the moment, he'd be greatly disappointed.
It says a Doctor Who anniversary snub would be disappointing.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't that sad?
Yeah, no, it's like you got your own spinoff. What more do you want? You know, that's more than Rose got, you know?
Yeah. And on a related note, we know now that we will not be seeing Rose in any of the 50th specials.
Yeah, Billy Piper.
I still hold out hope because she was on Graham Norton and she said all the news basically about this is saying that she's not returning. But all that I heard her say was that she hasn't been asked. So I still hold out a little bit of hope that she will be asked because I would love to see Rose again.
I don't know. I think at this point, I mean, we're 11 months out. You know, they've got to be in full prep mode here. If they haven't at least dropped the hint that they would like her to come back, I don't think it's going to happen.
What if she ends up being...
Well, they need to check availability for these working talent.
Yeah.
For whenever, you know, as they lay out their production map, they need to know, all right, well, if we're gonna go to film for this segment, we're going to be, you know, taking it to set in March, April, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to check in with all this talent.
Yeah, so, I mean, if they haven't said, hey, would you be willing to do this at this point, I think it's highly unlikely that they're going to bother asking her, which, you know, it makes sense. She flat out said on numerous occasions that she's done, that she doesn't want to come back. You know, so why are they going to bother going out of their way to try and get her back for this? It's, you know.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have some new material that's going to be coming out every month. Penguin Books, I believe is who it is going to be releasing a series of short ebooks once a month featuring each of the doctors, starting with a Hartnell story this month and then Troughton next month and so on and so forth until they finally release the Matt Smith story on the anniversary, November 23rd.
Now, is this the same discussion they were saying that of the series of short stories that were going to be published by well-known youth fiction or children's book authors?
Yes. Yeah. And let's see, on the 7th, so this coming Monday, depending on when you're listening, they're going to announce who it is that's writing the first book, and I think that's the pattern that they're going to follow is that they're going to announce early in the month who's writing the one coming, and then on the 23rd, they'll release the book.
Sure.
Okay.
Interesting.
So, and it looks like it's going to be a £1.99, so what's that, like $2.50, $3 here? Yeah. Something like that. So, you know, just it says they're going to be short, they're going to be, you know, all electronically distributed. So it's not actual print books, they're just doing ebooks. So,
I'm curious to try and theorize about who the authors are going to be now.
Yeah,
prominent British. Well, we're assuming British.
Yeah, I was going to say I'm almost certain that it's going to be British. You almost have to with this, but I don't know. I mean, I'll probably definitely pick one or two of them up and just give them a, you know, check them out. I mean,
sure. Based on who the author's going to be, I would imagine that based on popularity right now, there's a couple of authors that sort of spring to mind. Got Owen Colfer, who wrote all the Artemis Fowl books, and he did a lot of compilation and discussion books about Douglas Adams posthumously. So he's written a lot of children's fiction that's a little more geek-oriented, techie, sci-fi, paranormal fantasy, and it kind of jumps all over the place, but he'd be a great candidate for something like this. And the other I can think of I'm fond of him anyway, is Jonathan Stroud, who wrote the Bartimaeus trilogy and a couple of other ancillary books. Very good as far as writing things that have to do with not always the occult, but the whole idea of magic and the
paranormal and the...
Yeah, the sort of rifty kind of things, you know. And he definitely has the kind of dry wit and snark that could work well for one of the later doctors. So I'm putting my quarter bets down on one of those.
Yeah, I'll definitely be interested to see how this plays out. I mean, it's... you're almost guaranteed to make money off this kind of thing. So it's a sure bet for them. I'm just interested to see which direction they tend to go.
We got any other 50th news other than just the...
No, I think that's all that's come out so far.
Jenna Louise Coleman said that it's going to be huge, but that's just very vague.
Yeah, everybody's pumping it up at this point, so...
It would not shine well if she came out and said, it's going to be a nice show. I think it'll be all right.
Yeah, you might not want to miss it. You know. Yeah, if you've got something going on. Yeah.
Hey, today, as we're recording, this happens to be to the day, the anniversary of John Pertwee's first appearance in Spearheads from Space back in 1970, is his regeneration into the Third Doctor. So... Nice tip of the hat to Mr. Pertwee. Thank you very much for all of your contributions, sir, and driving around in that snazzy little car.
Bessie. Yeah, they're hitting a lot of milestones, and it's kind of cool to see everyone, you know, giving all this stuff the weight that it deserves. You know, realizing that this show has been on for 50 years, so, you know, clearly this stuff is of import. So, you know, it's very nice seeing that get its notoriety.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We have, you know, scarce little to go on as what we have coming on. We've got, you know, tentative titles of a lot of the episodes, a couple of brief, you know, like one or two sentences synopses on each one. So we're just going to, you know, hit a couple high points and then go through each episode discussing what it is that we think we're in store for.
Okay. So,
all right.
So obviously the big one being, you know, what is the deal with Clara?
Yeah.
So, all right. We touched on this a little bit last week, gave our theories and everything, but, you know, I really think that this is going to be a big through point for the rest of the series.
Yeah.
It's going to be what kind of carries the story through, you know, kind of threads it all together.
Yeah, similarly to what we had with The Impossible Astronaut and the fact that we were spending the entire good portion of the season trying to figure out what the actual death of the Doctor meant at the beginning and how that book ended. Mm-hmm. This is going to be their through line, and we could tell when we were watching the little coming soon teaser that they threw at the end of the Christmas episode when that aired, that it was like the last line that they spliced together for that little 45 or 60 second blurb was, you know, still to that moment figuring out, you know, what the hell is she?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I have a feeling we're not going to get anything concise for quite a few episodes in. In fact, I got a feeling we'll see a couple of red herrings along the way.
Yeah. It definitely seems that way.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, what do you guys think that she is? Like, is... We see, like, a more modern Clara, the girl that I believe was the one in the graveyard at the end of the Christmas special, as the one that's with the Doctor. Like, I think we can agree with that, right? It's, you know, it's her, or...
Yeah, I think that that's going to be the Clara that we get, and I think she's going to be more akin to... Yeah, Oswin. She's going to be more similar to Oswin's character of the, you know, computer genius, really quick and, you know, not shy of speaking her mind at all kind of a character that we got, as opposed to the, you know, Victorian era. You know, she was obviously smart and quick and everything, but there was a lot of, you know, she had to keep up appearances because that's what you do. You know, she couldn't completely speak her mind. You could tell that, like, there were some things that she wanted to say but didn't quite come out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, the thing I'm trying to take the two knowns and fill in the unknown in between. The Oswin that we chronologically, our timeline, we first met, had no knowledge of anything outside of her, you know, did not even have a functioning knowledge of her actual existence as a Dalek in the first place. It was something that, you know, had been either repressed, stolen, modified, altered. So none of her sense of self or identity could be used as any anything that we could connect to. We can't take any of that for any value. We've got Clara from the Victorian era, who seems to be, while she has, you know, gives no inclination through a good portion of the episode that she knows anything that's going on under the hood, she seems to respond to everything very well. She takes everything in stride. Nothing seems to phase her. She seems to just kind of, you know, she sees the interior of the TARDIS and makes a snarky comment and, you know, trips him up in his own shtick. And she gets more and more clever. Then she throws the clever boy line in there, and there's something else going on. So it looks like we're seeing her at a point after identity. Her backstory is following something in the order that we're seeing it now. So does that mean that she's been playing a ruse up to this point, waiting for the Doctor to come collect her? How did she get there in the first place? Is this one of, you know, the Eve Miles, you know, genetic code caught in the rift? You're going to see multiple copies of her.
I'll be very disappointed if they do that.
They really can't go with that now. I mean, it's been, they've pumped it up way too much to just be like, oh yeah, no, it's, she just looks like her. Yeah.
So yeah, the plenty of directions we could go. I'm kind of hoping that it's one of these things where, as a result of the torture or whatever that she was subjected to within the asylum, that it allowed, I don't even know how we can piece this together. I know what I want to see happen. I can't even articulate how it could come about. But then again, this is Stimo writing it.
Yeah.
So he could in classic fashion, invent the technology necessary to justify any path they want to take.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, one theory I heard early on, shortly after Asylum of the Daleks, was that, you know, if she was able to erase the Doctor completely, you know, what's to stop her from writing her memories, writing her personality, who she is, onto the path web or something, until she could find like a suitable container to put it into.
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm.
It could be that. It could be that it's the same character, which I don't think that's what we're gonna go with, you know, but it could be. It could be the same character that just, you know, lost some of the memories from that experience in the download. You know, mm-hmm. Who knows what... I mean, like you said, Stimo can just write pretty much anything, and we're just going to be like, oh, that's awesome, yeah.
I have a funny feeling that whatever we're going to get that threads the two Oswins that we know, or that we've met, that... In his loving fashion, we're going to end up with something that jumps back farther. If we're getting clues right now that Oswin in Red was the, you know, has some degree of memory or recollection that is carried over to Clara, carried over but gone back in time to Clara,
mm-hmm.
that we're going to get not only the pieces in between at some point, or at least an explanation of what the pieces in between are. But just to make things interesting, I got a feeling we're probably going to get something that chronologically precedes Oswald as well. Just because that would make it that much more intriguing for the viewer to say, oh, okay, well, now I understand how we got from point A to point B, but now I've got point 1A even before that,
yeah,
just to play with.
Or it could be like you said before that, you know, the start of every episode is the Doctor hunting down Clara because the last one died. Yeah. Just, she's scattered all through history, and he's just going, picking this one up. Maybe this one will live. No, maybe this one. Maybe this one. No.
It's like Rory meets the Cylons, and there are many copies.
Yeah.
And they have a plan. Okay.
We were talking last week about whether or not we were going to see River this in the second half of the season. And it actually, I'm not sure if this is confirmed or if it's just rumored at this point, but it looks like Alex Kingston is set to be part of the Series 7 finale.
Hmm.
Oh.
I'd like to see the source on that. I'd like to...
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's. It has her name in. Yeah, it has series 7 finale written by Stephen Moffat, directed by Saul Metzstein. Yeah, guest starring Alex Kingston, and in parentheses to be confirmed. Yeah, so. Okay. It could just be complete speculation or rumor, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, if they're going to put her in anywhere, that would probably make the most sense because that's going to be the big event. You know, that's mm-hmm. going to be the huge thing that it would make sense to have her in.
Okay.
So, but I mean, that's all the information we've got on the finale. We don't have a title. We don't have any. It's just who it's written by, who's directing it. And the fact that River might be in it.
I also have Michael Jenn will be in it, I saw.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who that is, but one other name at least.
Yeah.
I think I would love to see River again. We talked about this last week, and I wonder what her interaction with Clara would be like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm holding up for Catfight, personally.
Yeah.
Great. Well, let's kind of run through. You were talking about things that are still kind of fuzzy right now. Let's take the episodes that we have some confirmed facts here. One of the things that was featured pretty prominently in the little coming soon teaser that they threw at us to say here this ought to hold you over until Easter was them zipping around London on a motorbike. Mm-hmm. I guess that's segments from. I guess it all looks kind of modern, so we're taking Clara now to 2013. What's the story as far as anything we know about this this Bells of St. John episode?
All right, well, first off, episode 6 is titled right now The Bells of St. John. That's not confirmed. That's what is floating around. But so it's obviously written by Stephen Moffat, and it's set on present-day Earth, with the main plot centered around something living in the Wi-Fi, which is feeding on humans. That's a good fear right there, because how dependent are we on technology? You shut off my phone for a day, and I'm going to go absolutely nuts. So having something that's in the Wi-Fi feeding on people, that could be an intense story right there, but. I think that, unfortunately, though, because this is the first one after, Clara died, it's probably going to focus on the Doctor finding her and then trying to figure out who she is. It's going to put a lot of emphasis on Clara as opposed to this sentient Twitter, as the Doctor puts it.
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's going to carry a lot of weight as far as the monster and the plot. I think it's all going to be Clara.
Right, yeah, and that would make sense because if it's going to be red herrings, he's going to throw a few things at us, and we're going to be paying attention to the episode primarily just to figure her out,
mm-hmm.
and there happens to be a bad thing going on in the background.
Yeah, there's a reason for the Doctor to be there at that point. That's it.
Okay.
So, let's see, the next episode that we're going to get is called The Rings of Akatin, or Akatin, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. Do what?
I was thinking
I'm not sure if you type that there, whether they're actually, I always knew the pronunciation of Akhenaten. So, I mean, that was from history courses and things like that. Mm-hmm. So take out, if it's a variation on that name, so just say Akhenaten rather than Akhenaten.
Right, yeah, okay.
I picked up Bale of Cotton.
Yeah, it.
That's where I was going with that.
Yeah,
I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hinting at a possible Egyptian theme. The fact that Akhenaten was the husband of Queen Nefertiti. So I'm wondering if they're going to try and tie that together with dinosaurs on a spaceship, or if it's just
bring back Nefi.
Yeah, maybe, or just kind of a here's the other half of that marriage. It's. Maybe just a throwback to say, hey, yes, we touched on this. But let's see. It says that filming reports from the episode reveal that some of the story is set in the 1980s. So I don't know how that's going to correlate. Looking at the one still shot that that we have of it, the it's basically a screen capture from the coming soon thing. You know, it almost looks like a it seems almost reminiscent of like Blade Runner.
Yeah, very much so.
Just that kind of dystopian, dirty, like a, you know, shantytown kind of look with aliens in it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, now that you mention it, haven't they gone to a place like that before? Like where Donna had a thing on her back and stuff? That always reminded me of Blade Runner. I wonder if the Doctor, because I'm looking at the picture now, it does kind of look like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I mean, unfortunately, we have scarce little to go on to form any sort of hypothesis on this one. It's...
But based on my study of the Zapruder film.
Yeah, let's break down the cinematography and see what we can discern.
All right, so let's move on to the next one. The next one is tentatively titled The Cold War, written by Mark Gatiss, directed by Douglas McKinnon. So
this is the one that that Muppet was getting a little bit excited about, because this was his opportunity to... and this seems to be in this little blurb that he pulled together, seems to be kind of confirming this. He wanted one more opportunity to tie in a classic Who villain.
Yeah.
When
it all boils down, Stephen Moffat is a big fanboy. I mean, that's he's, you know, a self-proclaimed, he's always been a fanboy. There are pictures of him, you know, sitting down reading Target novels from when he was a kid. So it's, you know, of course he's going to pull history into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give him the chance. I mean, the one thing I admire about him is he has said, you know, I can't get hung up on that because, you know, there are fans who don't know that. So it's like he's constantly in a battle with himself about what he wants to see on the screen and what the fans expect to see on the screen.
Right.
So I think that he does a fairly good job of balancing the two. So if he does throw in, you know, a classic villain or something here. Actually, yeah, it says the rumor is that the Ice Warriors are going to return in this.
Right.
So
that's taking back a good chunk of time. Moffat is in a position though, because of the momentum of the show itself, his successes at the helm, and just his ability to be able to put the right people on task. For whatever it is that he's trying to accomplish, if he wanted to make a stretch, take a lesser known villain, take a reference to a lesser known character or something of that sort, and pop them in seamlessly so that viewers who do get the reference or get the throwback will have a great time with it, and people who don't aren't going to miss a beat. Similar to what we had with the Briggs daughter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking.
He has that kind of liberty, and he's got the skill to pull it off. So, whatever he wants to do, I'm more than happy to go along for the ride.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's see, we don't really have, a rumored deep space or deep sea adventure set on a submarine.
Right.
Mark Gatiss originally revealed his first two episodes contained the words meat, klaxon, and Vienna. Which, I mean,
weird little bits of facts are.
Well, Gatiss has gotten into that habit, you know, especially with Sherlock. You know, they release one word about the episode, like, you know, with Scandal in Belgravia, you know, the word was woman, you know, and then the other word was fall. And so it's like, you know, you take one word and kind of throw it out there, and people are, you know, so ravenous for it. They're like, oh my, and they tear that one word apart.
It reminds me of the little, I don't even know what you refer to them as, the icons they were using before and after the commercial breaks in Fringe.
Yeah. Where it would be like an apple cut in half with a baby and stuff.
And each image, depending on its positioning on the screen or how it was rotated, represented a different letter of the alphabet. So as you're watching the episode, you would piece together all the letters. And it was like the secret decoder ring, you know, ridiculous thing.
Your Ovaltine.
But people got fanatic about it, figuring out what it was. And usually it was just a simple one word, usually no more than about five or six characters, because it didn't take that many commercial breaks, even on Fox, that would be able to summarize, you know, talk about Moffat's love of the one word challenge from the Christmas episode, mm-hmm. that would encompass everything, you know. But come on, meet Klaxon, Vienna. Okay, Klaxon, I understand because it's on a submarine. That's your warning siren. Vienna. Okay, great. So depending on our time frame here, we could have had Austrians and Germans involved with, you know, who's on the sub or what have you.
And meet. Well, I mean, if it's the Ice Warriors, you know, they're looking for the meat. They're looking for the crew to harvest as meat. You know, it's a possibility. So, and now that we've you know, crapped on them for, you know, putting out these little words and saying, you know, what the hell are they trying to accomplish? We do exactly what it is they're expecting and talk about it for a good 5 minutes.
Well done, sirs.
How dare you? Let's see, the next episode actually has two names here. It's The Hider in the House or Phantoms of the Hex. Not sure which one they're going to settle on, if either. This is another episode written by Neil Cross. It appears to be another historical episode. That's all we've got at this point. Yeah.
This was supposed to be one of their, from what I understand, and I guess a lot of these, you know, the screen capture and those things, we were supposed to have a classic ghost story. Mm-hmm. One of the things that both Moffat and Coleman said in their discussions for how they were going to finish out the season, they were going to have a classic bone-chilling ghost story. And this would obviously be one of the most appropriate places to drop it in.
Yeah.
I don't know if it necessarily has to be as far as historical backdrop. I think they've worked Victorian period to death. They could jump anywhere they wanted in there.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to be Victorian. But it's kind of hard to say, okay, you're on a spaceship, there's, you know, all this technology, and we're going to throw in a ghost and expect you to believe that it's an actual ghost. Ghost stories kind of have to be set in a lesser technologically advanced age. Otherwise, you know, it's too easy to explain them.
I would imagine something, you know, just turn of the 20th century or so.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You know, the late 1800s, something like that. That would be a good time. We don't necessarily have to go back to the Victorian era, but...
Well, I mean, there is a still, we have a picture of it with Matt Smith. He's holding a candelabra. I was looking at a guy. It might be Dougray Scott. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but he's supposed to be in it. He's an actor I really like from Scotland. But he appears to be in just a regular... like 20th century suit, from what I can see. So I think you might be right. Maybe it's, you know, it could be like the 20s or 30s, maybe.
Yeah, just post World War One. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what comes with that as it gets closer. What they kind of leak. Mm-hmm. After that, we've got this is the episode that I am personally most looking forward to, even a little bit more than the Gaiman episode, is Journey to the Center of the TARDIS.
Yeah.
I mean, this, just the title gives me goosebumps. I'm so excited about this one, I can't even talk about it.
I mean, I hope it lives up to that.
It could be dinosaurs on a spaceship. Yeah, it's like, no. I mean, it just the idea that the whole thing is supposed to take place on the TARDIS. You've got a trio of brothers who are an intergalactic salvage crew. Yeah. And then you've got them, you know, traveling through the TARDIS. It just, this screams with possibility to me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Depending on whether they're not there. Okay.
No. I was going to say they can use a lot of, like, new sets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're definitely looking forward to seeing some new, you know, interior locations. But also, I'm curious to know, based on, you know, if they are not exactly, you know, they're a salvage crew. We don't know whether or not they do this on the up and up, or whether they are more along the lines of, you know, scuttling a ship on almost a pirate-like bent. Right. You know, and if that's the case, and if it is a little bit more malevolent like that, you know, does the TARDIS defend herself, or whether it's up to our, you know, our intrepid duo to work on her behalf?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, there are so many ways that this could go, and we know so precious little about it at this point that it's just, I can't help
fanfic.
So, and I'm so excited about this episode. But next we have the second Gatiss episode called The Crimson Horror. Mm-hmm. And we see the return of Jenny and Madame Vastra and Strax. Yay! Hopefully they can pull Strax off just as well as they did with the Christmas special and don't just go for the same jokes.
potato head jokes.
Well, you can always call them a potato, but, you know, just hopefully we see some new material, too. But it says this episode is set in a strange 19th century village called Sweetville, and the doctor is investigating when people start going missing in a factory that is run by the mysterious Winifred Gillyflower.
Perfect Whovian name.
Yeah. So, I think this is going to be another, not necessarily horror or like ghost story, but you know, just a very suspenseful one. And they're probably going to spend a bit of time focusing more on Vastra and Jenny.
Yeah, I remember Moffat saying that he had a spinoff in mind when he made them in A Good Man Goes to War, but he just is not going to ever have time to do a spinoff.
Right.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think that this will be the chance that, I mean, he's going to take this chance to, you know, expand on that story. You know,
right.
Give those characters a little bit more depth, because honestly, we haven't gotten very much from them at all. You know, in A Good Man Goes to War, it's like, okay, we find out who they are, we find out that they're together, and that, you know, Vastra is intelligent enough to see that Melody has, you know, Time Lord DNA in her.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Christmas special where you find out, okay, so she's Sherlock Holmes. And that's basically it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think that this episode is going to be another Holmesian kind of mystery story, don't you think?
It's possible.
Well, it's got all the backdrop to be. You've got, you know, look at your blurb synopsis about the, you know, people going missing and such. So you've got a, you know, a straight up mystery to be solved.
No,
we're back within their time frame. Yep. So there you go. Then we get to what I'm all about.
Yes.
On a number of levels, there's all kinds of things that should be going on in mm-hmm. here that are just going to be fantastic, and that's for the last Cyberman. So we've got Gaiman back at the helm from the writing. One of the things that I'm really pleased about, though, I mean, aside from the fact that you know that this is going to be a one of the most well-crafted scripts mm-hmm. for the latter half of the season, is that we've got Warwick Davis.
Yes.
I mean, come on, how can you go wrong with Warwick Davis?
Yeah.
I mean, I was planning on watching Willow this weekend anyway, so.
Who is Warwick Davis?
He was Willow. He was Wicket in the Star and Return of the Jedi. Name a sci-fi movie that has a little person in it, and it's probably Warwick Davis.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the guy is everywhere. I mean, he was in Harry Potter. You know.
My apologies for not knowing.
Well, apparently this is an actual like star-studded cast. I mean, everyone that they've got in here is supposedly fairly well known in England. Aside from Warwick Davis, I don't recognize any of the names. I might recognize them once I see faces, possibly, but I don't know anyone off the names.
Some of these names do look marginally familiar, but then again, we've all been convinced that that especially for things like television, BBC only has 8 actors. And they just reuse all of them, you know. Just watch any episode of Muffet's Coupling, and then you see all them show up in all these other things. And then, you know, they're, half of them are in the cast of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and then they all pop up in Who episodes, and they're just recycling the same 8 people.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most popular things I've seen is just people making lists of, here's a list of actors that were in, say, Harry Potter or Game of Thrones, and here's their characters in Doctor Who. And it's like, you've got a show that's been on for 50 years, and a country the size of Alabama with, you know, few actors that are, you know, a few quality actors, yet you're going to have overlap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, actually, one of my favorite things I found out is that the guy that plays Boba Fett in the original Star Wars trilogy was actually in an episode of Doctor Who, so That made me all kinds of happy right there.
Not that you'd know.
Yeah.
Can you cover up your face for a second and just breathe so I can...
Say, all right, now just say, he's no use to me dead. Yeah, all right, that's him right there. And then, of course, we've got the Series 7 finale, which we know nothing about. So there's no point in speculating because there's really nothing to go on. I mean, we can... It's possible that they go with the, you know, the first question, the fall of the 11th, the, you know, the Fields of Trenzalore, that whole thing that they were touting at the end of last season. I mean, they were really building that up, and then we haven't heard anything about it this season.
Right.
So,
well, they've got plenty of other things to keep us distracted with while they slip this in under the rug. I do honestly feel that because of the fact that this is going to be the one they're going to give us the last bit of information about, I have a feeling that they're probably not even going to give us production status information or post-production wrap-ups until they are at least three more episodes into the latter half of the series.
Mm-hmm. And even then, I think it's going to be, you know, they're going to guard that one fairly well. I mean, they're going to keep it pretty close to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Especially if your rumors do confirm that we're going to be seeing River again, they are going to, pardon my French, they're going to hump the hell out of this thing for months leading up to the finale. You know, they'll start tipping and tipping and tipping.
Yeah, and I mean you've got to think this is going to be the last thing that we see before the 50th anniversary. So this is going to be major. The more I think about it, the more I think, they've got to do something with the 50th anniversary. I mean, they're...
Leading into it? Setting it up?
Like, I can't see them not doing an episode, like a special for the 50th anniversary. I mean, it's... they've got the documentary going on. They've got, you know, other things kind of ancillary that are floating around, but... They've got to have something major, like a central thing saying this is the 50th anniversary, you know, in a nutshell. You know, all this stuff is cool. It's
frosty.
It's the 50th
anniversary Doctor Who Spectacular.
Yeah.
Music by...
Yeah. I mean, they've got to have something. So I really think that they're going to use the finale of this series to, you know, to lead into that. I mean... Huge cliffhanger, huge question mark, whatever it is. I mean, this episode is going to be the most brutal in terms of, you know, cliffhanger.
I think that's where they're going to go with that.
It'll be a show.
Yeah.
Things will happen. People will get weird about it.
We'll see the doctor.
And then we won't have any new content for like a year.
Well, I mean, that's not true. We'll have something for the 50th anniversary. We'll have the Christmas special, and then, you know, then we'll have to wait another 4 months like we are right now, and it's killing me.
Oh, my God. And just think, we have seven episodes that we know of between now and the next Christmas special, and we just had the Christmas special. There's so little of this. So the 50th anniversary better be something spectacular.
It's all starting to make me feel like the likelihood of them running the gaps wider and going from a weekly serial to something, you know, bi-monthly or so just seems more and more likely.
You know, I'm already suffering at the hands of Sherlock. I don't know how much more I can take this.
Seriously.
You know, I'm just saying I understand what they're theorizing. I may not agree with it, but I understand it.
If that news starts coming out, there will be an announcement coming that, you know, we're going to start going to a bi-weekly setup for GPR. Oh, no. But, well, I think that's about it as far as the series we've got coming up.
Yeah. Now the long wait begins again, longer this time than it was before. But we're going to keep ourselves occupied, right? We've got some things to discuss and things to do.
So what are we going to talk about next week?
Well, we're going to start a companion arc. We've, you know, just said goodbye to a couple of companions. We've just said hello to a new one. You know, I think it's a good time to look back at the ones that we've had so far and look at a best of for each companion.
When you say ones we've had so far, though, how far back are we allowing ourselves to go?
Yeah, see, that's the question I was asking myself. I think that it would just make the most sense to start with New Who, simply because the companions in Classic Who really didn't have a lot of depth. I mean, I want to look at, you know, what made, you know, what episodes Rose stood out in, what episode Donna was particularly awesome in, you know, instead of just, this was an awesome episode that happened to have this companion. Yeah, so I think we'll start with New Who, and we'll work through them, and then if we want to go back and touch on older ones, or if you guys want to hear more about a particular companion, you know, you can let us know. We'll kind of play it by ear, but we'll definitely be starting off with Rose next week. We're just starting out a new year, and I think it's time to kind of revive things and everything. So we're actually going to be updating a few things with the podcast, with the website. We're going to be getting a new, better website coming. It's going to take a little bit of time. Just know that it is in the works. Probably going with a different hosting and things like that. Just everything's going to make it better, a better experience on the whole. We'll try and make it as seamless as possible to, you know, so that you guys won't miss anything and won't have to change your feeds or anything like that. If it turns out that we can't avoid that, that something is going to have to change, that, you know, we'll give you plenty of notice up front so that you can prepare for it and let you know when it's coming. But there's some exciting stuff coming in the future, so, you know, definitely be on the lookout for that.
That's great.
So, all right. Any last words?
Canine. That's all I want. I want lots and lots of canine. Because I've been thinking about this. I've been going back and, you know, and I jump back into Classic Who every once in a while. I was talking with a good friend of mine who is a long-standing Whovian, and he had heard some sort of a theory, some sort of Clara theory that had to do with Romana. And the whole idea of having a time lady mm-hmm. reappear. Right. And it bent my brain, and I really like threw me off for this whole, it was during a New Year's Eve party, and I spent the whole evening kind of thinking about that when I should have been focusing on other things. Because then, you know, because there was Romana and there was Romana 2, you know, and the whole thing just got very kind of higgledy-piggledy. And I thought, God, I just need something I can, like, latch on to. So even if they do it in the 50th, or if they do it some sort of a thing, you know, since we've got the Cybermen and the Ice Warriors, I need canine. I need something. I need some involvement with canine before this season is out. And I don't care if it comes in the latter half of 7, or whether I get a lot of steepage of canine in the 50th, little mini bits that they're going to be doing. And I know there are going to be a number of them, both broadcast and online. I need more canine. More canine. All the canine.
Well, we got a reference to him in The Power of Three. I mean, isn't that good enough for you?
No, so demanding. I didn't see him.
I think that's all you're going to get.
we'll see. How about you, Melissa?
Last words? No.
I am done with this. This has been episode 19 of Gallifrey Public Radio, and we will see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Howzy.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week on iTunes or at gallifreypublicradio.podbean.com. Have something you want to say or just want to say hello? Send us an email at gallifreypublicradio@gmail.com or on Twitter @GallifreyRadio. We love getting comments, so head over to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and your comment on the show. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.